Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Let's roll out the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and hey, of course, it's Friday.
Start spreading the news.
Well, the music means Schomburg Stu's with us.
Yeah, odd coincidence. I was just watching Gene Kelly and Frank Sinatra do some dancing on YouTube.
Well, there you go. All right, well, you know, if you'd like to call in and talk to Stu or I, you can talk to Stu about dancing if you'd like. 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Otherwise, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, those blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so something should be popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. And, hey, you went all the way over there. Go ahead and give that a like. Why not? Of course, don't forget we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Sadly, we're still working on getting Stu on Twitter. You know, we've got about a little over a month and a half left to get it done. We're pushing the deadline, but we'll see if it gets there. As always, feel free to hit me up at Burke Time. Any questions for Stu, I will forward them along, and We will take it from there. But, Stu, I got to hit you up with this. I just saw this about 5 minutes ago being reported by Sarah Spain, who is I believe she retweeted it from somebody else. Apparently, there is a relatively decent possibility that your Cubs may move Wilson Contreras this offseason to help start their rebuild or remold or however you want to call it. You know, now I was kind of thinking it would be Victor Caratini that they would make the move with, but how are you feeling about moving a guy like Contreras, and can they get adequate value for him?
Yeah, I did not see that. I've been checking the sports pretty much most of the day, and I haven't seen that. That must be relatively new, that rumor, but I think that's a terrible move on the Cubs' part. And I keep, as I pointed out many times to you, I keep remembering when they traded Smokey Burgess for some journeyman catcher. And how did that work out for them for the next 10 to 15 years?
So, yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, Caratini has looked okay. You know, I mean, I would have to guess he would step in and be the number one guy. You know, but with the exception of Yasmani Grandal, you know, the off-season catching market for free agents is really weak. So apparently, yeah, teams are checking in on, you know, on Contreras. And interestingly, and this is where it becomes really interesting, one of the teams that may be in this, and they refuse to kind of name names, but don't be surprised if you hear the Houston Astros name come up, because Robinson Chirinos and Martin Maldonado are not only both free agents, but Maldonado's 33 and Chirinos is 36. So they're going to be wanting to move on from that situation, and they have one of the better farm systems in baseball. So that could be really interesting when it comes to, you know, kind of working that out. So I don't know.
I don't. To me, that move, believe that move makes no sense to me whatsoever. How often do you get an all-star catcher like Contreras, who's good to go for the next 10 years at least, barring any injuries?
So yes, you are looking again. You know, you're looking at this team. We've talked about it before. They're going to come into some money problems here really soon, and Contreras is going to be one of those guys. You know, he's arbitration eligible this year and projected to end up making about $5 million when it's all said and done. So that's not terrible, but, you know, as those go on, And if he continues to play like he has, it's going to be a lot of money coming that way. And, you know, you can't keep Baez, Bryant, Contreras, Rizzo. There's no way you can keep all these guys together without paying a gigantic luxury tax. And I don't think the Cubs want to do that.
The question I have in mind is this. If he actually is in the trading block, as this current rumor is, would they just get prospects in return, or would they get a bona fide major league ballplayer in return?
It seems like the rumor is now, and again, it's not so much that he's on the trading block, but that teams have been reaching out to the Cubs, kind of kicking the tires to see if they would be willing to make that move. But it appears that as it was worded in, you know, the Twitter little blurb I saw, it appears that it's going to be for prospects as they kind of try to remold again, because, you know, they're in that situation where slowly but surely they're going to have to make tough decisions on these guys. You know, and like Dan and I have mentioned a couple times, I mean, we've kind of believed that it was going to be Chris Bryant who was going to be the guy that went away, but maybe they keep him and it's Contreras that goes?
You know, thinking about this, that you're in effect with the free agency and arbitration situations, you're penalizing a team for success. And then the
yes.
team has to go back and rebuild again. Now, does that seem fair to you?
Well, you know, some of these teams handle it really well. You know, the Yankees did a really nice job of what you could call rebuilding on the fly while still being able to stay in playoff contention. Of course, the other example is the White Sox, who tried it for years and just couldn't get it right. So, you know, there's good and bad in this, but, you know, this is the price you pay for rebuilding, because all these young guys come up at the same time and their arbitration clocks run concurrent. So you know what's going to happen when you get into this.
Yeah, it's funny that some teams that get into the situation still have contenders year after year, are contenders year after year, despite the fact that some of their top prospects all came up at the same time and they have to make some moves, and they still wind up winning their division. Now, how does that happen?
Yeah, well, now here's one of the things that I don't like. I just found the article here, CBS Sports. Is where you can hunt this down, and I'll post it on the Sports Time Radio Facebook page so it'll go out. This is according to ESPN's Jeff Passan. It says, other teams expect the Cubs to make Wilson Contreras available this winter. All right, you know, they go on and kind of pitch some of his stats and everything here. Now, this is the part I don't like at all. It said the Cubs would presumably trade Contreras for a package of, it would be prospects, then sign one of the available free agent catchers, be it Yasmani Grandal, Robinson Chirinos, Alex Avila, or Travis Dinald. You know, I mean, if they're going to trade Contreras, I think they just got to go all in with Caratini and get him a veteran backup, don't you?
I don't know. The word I thought of immediately came into mind was getting Grandal, but if they did get him, would it be for a one-year deal?
See, I don't know if he would take another one-year deal. You know, he did that with Milwaukee last year, you know, as they say, bet on himself, and it looks like it's paid off for him. He had a really good season. And, you know, there are teams out there that are going to be willing to, you know, to go multiple years and give him, you know, probably really big money for a catcher. So I don't think you can get him on a one-year deal.
Here's the question I have regarding that possibility of trading Contreras. If the Cubs, in fact, did this move for prospect, does that mean they're no longer a contender?
Well, you know, you got him as a contender right now?
I have him fourth again for next season based on what they have right now
in
their roster. So.
Not a right? According to you, they're not a contender, so they wouldn't be in contention.
Of course, this time I look for Cincinnati to really move up. I predicted they would move in the third last year, but it didn't happen. But I see them from being a contending team next season. And I think Milwaukee may be the team to beat next year as the way it stands right now.
Yeah, well, Milwaukee's got holes to fill, too. You know, I mean, obviously, they're going to lose Grandal. They're probably going to lose Moustakas this year. You know, they kind of caught a break last year with him kind of falling in their lap and being able to sign him to another relatively low-money deal for a guy who produces like he does. So I don't know if that would happen 2 years in a row to them. Their pitching is still a shambles with the way they handle it. So I don't, you know, while they may be a contender, they're not a, what you would call a threat to win the World Series at all.
No. And I don't see St. Louis repeating next season as the NL Central champions.
Yeah, well, you know, they were kind of a surprise this year. I don't know too many people who were on their bandwagon. But, you know, I mean, they're going to come back with a good team. You know, it'll be interesting to see if they try to bring Marcelo Ozuna back or if they're kind of done with that experiment and they go a different way. But I still think it's looking like it's going to be three-team heavy. And, you know, we'll just, you know, we're going to kind of end up seeing who shuffles out where next year. And it may end up being very similar to how this year went.
It could be. Well, you know, we've talked about this back and forth, and you know who the player, I would not like to see Contreras go, but I wouldn't mind seeing Chris Bryan being dealt. He's been, to me, a major disappointment. Injuries notwithstanding, I mean, I know he batted second in the order most of the time, but his RBIs were just way low for a guy who drove in close to 100 or over 100 once or twice. And he was down to below 80 RBIs this year. And
we're going to be with any of those guys who hit number two. You know, if I remember right, I believe Dan and I were even looking at the fact that, you know, Mike Trout had a low RBI output because he's hitting second in the Angels lineup. And it's just that spot in the batting order. There's just not enough RBI opportunities. And that's why I'm still kind of baffled why teams insist on shoving what they consider their best hitter in the number two spot. That, you know, according to sabermetrics and everything, that's where you're supposed to hit your best guy. So I don't know, you know, why you would plug your best guy in what's one of the worst RBI opportunity spots. You know, it may be the second worst one behind just the 8-hole in the National League with the pitcher hitting behind you.
If Bryan remains with the Cubs, do you think David Ross would move him down the batting order for next season?
You know, this is that one thing we're going to have to learn, and it's going to be one of those things that we're not going to know until we see it with Ross. You know, because he has no managerial experience. So we don't know what kind of manager he's actually going to be. You know, will he be strictly, you know, an analytic sabermetric guy, or will he play some hunches? Or, you know, and I know Theo Epstein has denied this, but is he just the front office puppet and they're going to feed him the lineup like the Dodgers do with Dave Roberts?
I don't see them doing it that way. But, of course, it's early yet. We won't know for sure until the next season rolls around.
So, yeah, you know, and that's the big key is what is he? You know, what kind of manager is he? How does this work? You know, and, you know, those are questions we're just, you know, sadly we're not going to be able to answer until we actually – get into the regular season, because preseason, you know, exhibition season isn't going to show us anything.
No, not at all. Well, the way things are shaping up, I may be at your apartment 5 or 6 nights a week next year anyway, so I'll be able to see the Cub games.
Yeah. So, yeah, depending on how that works out. So, yeah, oddly, of all the surprises, you know, good old AT&T actually got it all taken care of earlier, and, you know, U-verse is going to carry the, you know, the marquee network or whatever the hell they're calling it. But, yeah, is it Comcast? You're with Comcast, right? So you and Dan are kind of waiting to see.
Right, and I understand negotiations haven't really started in earnest yet with Comcast, but it's funny that they signed some deals not only with AT&T U-verse, which you have, with some of the outlets in Iowa that only have seen a few Cub games during the course of the year, but they signed with, I think, Cablevision of Iowa, so Des Moines is going to see a lot more Cub games next season than they have in the years past.
Well, yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that's going to go.
No, I think I've mentioned.
But yeah, you know,
I was going to say one more thing was that, as you know, and I think I pointed this out to you, in Los Angeles, a very, very large percent of the market that don't get the Dodger games, and this has been going on for several years now.
Yeah, you know, Dan and I have also talked about that a few times here as well. That yeah, they're still trying to work that out in LA so everybody can actually see, you know, all the Dodger games.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how that's been working in New York. I know New York has the YES market, the YES channel. Wondering if the vast majority of fans in the New York area are able to see the Yankees.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm wondering if everybody carries the net, the YES network. So
yeah, lots of interesting things for next season cropping up. But not only, of course, the rumors about Contreras and even Chris Bryan and everything else, but are we going to be able to see the games? Well, you don't have that problem anymore. I was quite surprised, by the way, to see how quickly that the U-verse came to a deal with the Marquee Network.
Yeah. You and me both, considering this is a company that couldn't negotiate properly with the NFL and lost the NFL Network, which I still don't have back. So.
And also during several months ago, didn't you lose some of the CBS major channels for a few weeks?
All of them, yeah. We lost all, you know, the main CBS, which of course in our area is Channel 2, and then they have their own sporting network, which we lost. And I think there was one other channel that went around. Yeah, that went on for about 2, maybe almost 3 weeks. We went without that because of contract negotiations.
Yeah, that can be quite annoying. I think the worst one that I've heard of, the worst provider in terms of that is the Dish Network, who have been notoriously difficult to negotiate with.
Aren't they owned by AT&T now? So that would explain it.
Yeah, they are now. So I'm wondering if maybe that's all resolved now. If they aren't, it's difficult to work with since they are owned by AT&T U-verse. But in years past when they weren't, they were tough to deal with.
So yeah, you know, luckily for us, you know, we had Dish before we switched over to U-verse. And luckily we didn't have too many problems. We were okay with Dish. You know, the biggest problem we had with them was the outages. You know, every time the wind blew hard, it went out.
Yeah, so. I know that they claim that they don't have those problems anymore, but I know that my neighbor always used to lose his. He has one of those Dish Network things, and when there was a heavy rainstorm, he couldn't watch anything. So I would prefer the what they have right now, Comcast or U-verse or anything else.
I've been to switch over to Comcast just for the internet service, but no, you know, no luck yet.
You know, and they have a very good depth. I think I mentioned to you that we switch modems to a high-speed modem through Comcast, and it's terrific. No more streaming issues, and we had a lot of those. No more internet outages, and it's quite quick. So I would be reluctant to switch, even if the Cubs didn't come up with a deal with Comcast.
So yeah, well, you know, yeah, we'll have to see. Hopefully, like you said, they've got plenty of time to work this out, and you know, we won't have, you know, won't have any, you know, any issues. So
yeah, we hope. Well, I can always revert back to what I did when I was a kid growing up, and listening to the Cubs on the radio.
Yeah. So, which I do from time to time, because you know how I feel about, you know, Lennon, good old JD.
Well, you feel about the same as I do with Lennon, JD.
And just one of those, you know, one of those things. So, okay, that was kind of weird. I was looking for they announced the Silver Slugger winners. So I wanted to see who they announced, and for some reason, the first thing took me to last year's award winners, and I'm like, no, why do I want to go over last year's? I want to see who won this year.
Yeah, that reminds me. Sometimes when I check the NFL, the football scores, the NCAA football scores on a Saturday, oh, I forgot to see what this team did, or Northwestern, or Illinois, or any of the top teams. I'll plug in the scores, and I'll get the scores from week one or week two.
Yeah, so that's always fun. But here, I don't know who won, so I'm going to run the list down real quick here. Catchers in the American League, it was Mitch Garver. In the National League, it was JT Realmuto. First base, it was Carlos Santana, even though I thought he spent most of the year as a DH. I might have to check that. Then in the National League, it was Freddie Freeman. Second base in the AL, DJ LeMahieu. In the NL, it was Ozzie Albies. Third base, Alex Bregman in the AL and Anthony Rendon in the NL. Shortstop in the AL, it was Dansby Xander Bogaerts. And in the NL, it was Trevor Story. The outfield, the AL, we have Mike Trout, no surprise there, George Springer and Mookie Betts. In the NL, we got Cody Bellinger, Christian Yelich, and Ronald Acuna Jr. Nelson Cruz won the designated hitter one for the AL only, of course. And then in the NL, Zach Greinke picked up the Silver Slugger. So there you go. No Cubs. No Cubs, no Sox. And Tim Anderson won a batting title.
I'm surprised that Freddie Freeman won. I didn't think he was all that great, especially towards the end of the season.
So, yeah, you know, this has always been kind of an oddly voted award. You know, I remember the one year Rafael Palmeiro won at first base, and he played like four games or six games at the position, and they somehow voted him for the award. So it, you know, I don't know what it actually means to win a Silver Slugger, but you know, we're going to have all the awards coming out next week, and you know, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, there's always some surprises there, and I wonder how that affects the contracts of a player, especially if they're going into free agency. That gives them a chance to make more money if they sign a new deal.
Oh, and I was actually wrong about Santana. He played 135 games at first base last year. For some reason, I thought he spent most of his time at DH, but no, I was way off there. Okay, so that's fine. So, yeah, no, and, the other day, you know, they've already screwed up the AL Rookie of the Year voting because somehow Eloy Jimenez didn't end up in the top three. You know, I've known all along, you know, they gave this award to Yordan Alvarez after he played in a week in the majors. So, you know, all along I knew he was going to win it, but somehow Eloy Jimenez and Vlad Guerrero Jr. didn't make the cut for top three. But Brandon Lau, who was hurt and played 80 games, did. And John Means, who is the best pitcher on the Baltimore Orioles, are the other two runner-ups. So they'll finish second and third after Alvarez probably wins. He must have won the award unanimously or something. So, because I can't see voting for either of those two guys in first place.
Hey, you think that Jimenez would have garnered more votes because he wound up with 33, 34 home runs.
He led Ricky in home runs and RBIs and somehow didn't finish in the top three when that's all – home runs is all that matters to analytic people. So I don't get that at all.
Yeah, very strange. The decisions there. Have they announced the winners in the National League yet?
No, it all starts next week. The MLB Network starts handing out the awards. I don't know who it starts with. If I remember, for some reason, I thought it starts with Manager of the Year. And then they kind of build up to where it's, you know, the MVP and the Cy Young stuff go last. So, but yeah, that all kicks in next week. So Dan and I can argue about it. And then I'm guessing you and I will probably recap it next Friday.
You know, now these awards, when these awards are garnered, the playoffs don't enter into them. Is that correct?
No, the voting is already supposed to be done by the time the playoffs start. So, you know, and obviously the interesting thing, you know, one of the things they always used to say when they were talking about MVP was, well, you know, this guy helped this team get into the playoffs or that guy helped this team get into the playoffs. Until Mike Trout came along, and then all of a sudden that no longer mattered because he should win it every year, no matter what.
That's been turning out pretty much that way, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, especially since, you know, his team was in fourth place at 72-90 and actually had a worse record than the White Sox. So,
well, he's got the name. You know, once you start establishing yourself as a premier player, no matter how your team does, you're gonna pretty wind up high in voting.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's weird because it's not the thing that I have so much. Like, I have no doubt that Trout is a great player and, you know, he deserves the votes. But, you know, we're not talking about the best player. We're talking about the most valuable. And I think that kind of, you know, comes into a different classification. So, you know, I just don't see that being the same thing. You know, like, you know, again, Trout is easily the best player in the league, but is he, you know, is he the most valuable? And I don't think he is.
Well, you know, this is not a unique situation. I remember when Ernie Banks won 2 years in a row as MVP with the Cubs, and it certainly didn't help the Cubs get into the playoffs by any stretch of the imagination, but he won 2 years in a row. So these things do happen.
So, yeah, you know, you just wonder, you know, like, obviously, you know, it's Mike Trout, Marcus Semien, and Alex Bregman are the three finalists. So, you know, like, you know, I'm okay with that, but, like, I'm wondering where a guy like DJ LeMahieu finished, because you can't tell me he wasn't the most valuable player on the Yankees last year.
Well, he's certainly had a terrific season.
Right. You know, yeah, and he went out, you know, and he had a good year. I think he hit a career high with 26 homers. You know, he drove in 102 runs. He hit .327. You know, and he played all over
the
diamond.
Right?
He played first, second, and third.
And
you know, and again, I'm not advocating.
Also, he played that, first base.
Yeah. You know, I'm not advocating that he win the award, you know, but, you know, see, that's valuable to me. You know, where would the Yankees have been without DJ LeMahieu? You know, where would the Astros have been without Alex Bregman, who had to fill in at shortstop when Correa got hurt? So he moved over from third base to play shortstop.
Yeah, I'm wondering sometimes if the voting is a popularity contest type of thing. As I pointed out, once you're established as one of the top players in the league, no matter how your team does, you're gonna garner a lot of votes. But is that really fair?
Yeah, right. You know, and it's one of those things where, again, this isn't a guy who I believe should win the award, but Jorge Soler should be a top 10 MVP candidate this year, even if he finishes 10th. He should get some votes for the year he had.
He certainly
but,
should.
You know,
with the amount of home runs he hit and RBIs, he should definitely get
right,
some votes.
I don't know if the voters pay that close of attention because obviously they didn't in Rookie of the Year voting. I mean, they have no clue what's going on. So were they smart enough to realize the kind of year – Soler had or what LeMahieu meant to the Yankees. You know, I mean, you can kind of look at these things and, you know, hell, if the Red Sox had a better year, we'd be arguing if Rafael Devers or Xander Bogaerts deserved to win the MVP. So,
you think that Soler loses a lot of attention, a lot of votes because he played for a losing team in a small market?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, easily. And again, you know, like I said, I mean, he doesn't deserve to win the award. He just deserves to get votes.
Oh, certainly.
You know, I mean, like, you can't tell me there were 10 guys who had better seasons or who were more valuable to their team. You know, and I get it. The Royals stunk. Imagine if you take Soler out of that lineup. They've got Whit Merrifield.
You're talking about a guy that hit, what, 47 homers and drove in about around 115 runs, not getting any votes?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all.
You know, and again, right, you know, and again, this is at a time where analytics point to home runs and launch angle and, you know, distance and all that other stuff. So, I mean, I think it would just be, you know, a slap in the face if he doesn't finish in the top 10. And again, 10th, I would be fine if he finishes 10th. You know, just
I
just hope they didn't embarrass themselves enough and not vote for him.
And remember, he played 162 games too, correct? He played in every game.
Yeah, he played every game.
So he has to get some votes. He has to get some kind of recognition for that kind of a year.
You would think, but, you know, you got to remember, these are the same idiots who wanted to give Mike Trout the award over Miguel Cabrera when he won the Triple Crown because Trout was a better base runner.
Well, base running is important, but that shouldn't
make
the decision in his favor.
Right. The guy won the Triple Crown. You win the Triple Crown, they should shower you with awards. These idiots tried to take the MVP award away from him.
Yeah,
how many Triple Crowns?
Absolutely ridiculous.
You know, guys win the Triple Crown every year, right? I mean, so it's no big deal. Oh, no, wait, nobody's won one since. Morons.
Yeah, there's some strange decision-making that you see when these votes are handed out, and you kind of shake your head and figure out, how do they do that, and what reason do they have for doing it that way? And it's hard to understand sometimes.
So, you know, yeah, it's just so weird, you know, when you hear these things, and, you know, it's just like, wait, they wanted to do what? And again, you know, it frustrates me and it just makes me crazy. And it's like, why do you guys get votes? You know, what did you do to have this vote or keep this vote? You know, and why do you still have it? Because obviously you're not paying attention to baseball.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if some of these guys vote because – or don't vote with someone because they don't like the person. They don't like the baseball player. He was nasty to them in interviews. Or does that actually factor in?
You know, I know it factors in the Hall of Fame voting. I don't know how much, you know, it factors in when it comes to, you know, this kind of voting. Maybe, but I hope not, but maybe.
Yeah, you would hope not. Well, we'll find out pretty soon, won't we?
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, again, like I said, it just makes me crazy, you know, when they get going. And, you know, like the National League will be interesting too because it's, you know, Christian Yelich, who missed a boatload of games at the end of the season. You know, what is it, Anthony Rendon and then Cody Bellinger are the three finalists. You know, and I know there are a ton of people pushing for, you know, it should be Yelich, and Yelich did this and Yelich did that. And he did tie for the National League batting title, even though that means nothing now. But, you know, missing that many games, I think, kind of eliminates him in my mind.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there.
If he had played you know, if he'd have played 20 or 25 more games, could he have gone cold? Would he have stayed hot? You know, we just don't know, and I think that puts him third. You know,
yeah,
especially when
it
comes
to
being
with you. Yeah, great player, but he missed too many games toward the end of the season, so I'd have to rank him third also.
Yeah, well, you know, then we start thinking about it. When you use the word valuable, how is Anthony Rendon not the most valuable player after the season? The, you know, from where the Nationals came from, and again, I think it was June 1st, they had as many losses as the Detroit Tigers. All right, think about that. All right, as many losses as the Detroit Tigers, and they ended up getting back to the wild card. You
winning
know, now you can't
games.
Factor in the fact that they, right, you can't factor in the fact that they ended up winning the World Series because that doesn't count. You know, it doesn't count in these kind of voting. All right, the Tigers went on to lose 114 games. All right, the Nationals lost 69. That's where that went.
And don't forget, they were 19-31, I think, at one time. And so
yeah,
imagine what their record was
like
for the last 112 games to do that.
So, you know, tell me how Rendon isn't valuable.
Yeah, I think he's going to wind up winning it. I think he's going to win it. But,
you know, and then
I've
just
been wrong
add
before.
In. Yeah, you know, nothing against Bellinger or Yelich, but third base is a little tougher position than the outfield. You know, I don't
yeah.
know if they actually factor it in when they do the voting, you know, look at defense and stuff, because that no longer matters in today's game. But, yeah, you know, it should. So.
Right. Now, is Martinez the hands-down winner of the Manager of the Year?
You know, you would have to think so, wouldn't you? You know, I can't really see anybody else deserve. You know, I mean, there, you know, there obviously there are some guys who would be in that, you know, the discussion, but how can you not give it to him?
You have to. I mean, I would be shocked if he didn't win that award.
Yeah, you know, cause, yeah, and I'm trying to remember who I'm. God, I wonder if he's even is he even a nominee? Let me see if I can Bing it here real quick and figure out if he is a candidate this year. I mean, you would think he would have to be, but obviously stranger things have happened. So, you know, I know
yeah, well,
I believe Schnitker of the Braves is. And so is Schilt from the Cardinals, Mike Schilt. Got to be careful how you say that one. So
yes, watch yourself.
Yeah,
yeah, I can see those two. I can see those two being involved. Of course, the Braves have had a good young team anyway, with a lot of talent on their team. So I can't see the Atlanta manager winning that award.
So, let's see. Did they okay, well that didn't help me at all. So but yeah, I don't know. you know, like I said, I don't know how he couldn't be a nominee, you know, in that scenario, but maybe he's not. Let's see. That list doesn't have him there.
Well, how many nominees
on,
do they have? How many nominees do they have for manager?
There are three finalists.
That's
in
it.
Every yeah. Here you go. This is the one, the Bing one I'm looking for here. So let me see. Rookie manager. Believe it or not, he's not even nominated. It's Craig Counsell, Mike Schilt, and Brian Snitker are the three finalists.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
At what
so,
point,
again,
at
we
what
get
point, to... At what point in the season do they make the final three selection? October?
After
September?
Your ballot... What is due in, I believe, I think it's before the playoffs start, maybe, or you know, there's a limit right after the end of the regular season, but you can send them in pretty much any time in the last month. So you've got to wonder if maybe some of these Yahoos sent it in early and discounted Washington.
It sounds like they sent it in a little bit too early. I just don't see how they could eliminate Martinez as one of the top three.
So, yeah, I don't get that at all. But here, I actually found the schedule as well. Next Monday, we'll get Rookie of the Year. Tuesday, we'll figure out the manager. Wednesday is the Cy Young, and then Thursday is the MVP. So, you know, while Dan and I will go day to day, you and I will be able to sit down next Friday and go, okay, what did they screw up doing this? So
there are really some talented rookies that in contention in the National League this year. My goodness, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible amount of talent.
You know, this is a walk away for Pete Alonso. It's not even close. So.
But there were some. There were some other. He wasn't the only one that had terrific rookie seasons.
Yeah, but he was the only one who hit 50 home runs, and again, that's all
that
matters.
That's true.
You know, even though Soroka from the Braves, the pitcher who's nominated, I thought had a really good season, and I'm wondering if maybe he could be kind of a sneaky outside bet, but, in the game today with home runs just meaning so much, I can't see him getting the votes needed. My guess is it'll be Alonso 1-2 and a big gap to third.
Yeah, it won't be unanimous, but it'll be pretty close.
Because here's his numbers. I mean, these are really good numbers. He made 29 starts, and again, this is for a team that won the division, 13-4 with a 2.68 ERA, and he threw 174 and two-thirds innings. So, he really put up some quality numbers as a rookie starting pitcher. Just kind of like, oh, okay, take a gander at this guy. But then, what he's stuck going up against is, of course, Alonso hit 53 bombs, drove in 100, a buck 20, and hit 260. So.
Yeah, it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to wind up winning it. And I wasn't, before the season started, I wasn't all that familiar with him. And did he put up those kind of stats in the minors?
I'm oddly, if I remember correctly, and this is going back to the start of the season, he wasn't even supposed to win the job. Originally they were going to go with Dominic Smith, who's been a prospect for a while, and Alonso beat him out in spring training. And let me see. I can get you his minor league numbers here in a second, and we'll take a look. I'm guessing he didn't hit 53 homers anywhere in the minors, but let's see. He split 2018 between single A and double A. He did overall. He hit 285 with 36 homers and 119 RBIs. So yeah, he had he has shown power throughout the minors. Obviously. That was his biggest year. And then with the juice ball, of course, helped him out this year. So, he's a career 290 hitter in the minors.
Yeah. And sometimes you look at those numbers that he did this year and you think, was he taking some stuff and concealing it? You hate to think that now. You hope that it doesn't happen anymore, but the thought is always there.
Yeah, I think this year it was more the baseball. When you look at these numbers and what these guys did, it's just there's no way it couldn't have been because this is everybody who was putting up these numbers. It wasn't just Alonso. I mean, we had guys who had never hit you know, 20 homers or 30 homers or whatever in their, you know, in their career, just come out and, you know, hit bomb after bomb. And it was like, wait, what's going on here? You know, why all of a sudden is this going on? So
you think behind the scenes, MLB is going to do something with the baseball for next season, or take a hard look at it?
Yeah.
And see if maybe they've made some mistakes.
Yeah, I believe they go back to the old ball. Because their theory, right or wrong, good or bad, plus or minus, however you look at it, they've always believed that home runs improves ratings and attendance. But it really didn't this year. So I definitely think they go back to the old baseball. And the tough part with that is, you know, especially for teams, is some of these guys are going to make a lot of money off the stats that they put up this year, and they're not going to do that anywhere close to that next year if they go back to the old baseball. So
it'll be very interesting to see what Alfonso does in his second year in baseball. See if we can even come close to duplicating what he did this year.
So yeah, but the number of guys over 30 home runs is insane. I mean, even when you look at it, Jose Altuve of the Astros hit 31. So, it looks like there were 56 guys with 30 or more home runs.
And the normal amount is much less than that normally, right? It's
probably
not even close to that number.
Half that. You look at some of the names, like Mitch Garver hit 31 home runs in 93 games for the Twins. He only had 85 hits all year. 31 of them were home runs. So.
Yeah, it was a crazy season. It was really a crazy season.
Yeah, you can say, Vogelbach, the former Cub great, the same thing. He had 96 hits and 30 of them were bombs.
Yeah, he's fortunate to be in the American League.
Yeah, well, that's where he belonged. That's why he was never a real threat to actually be, make the Cubs. He had Rizzo in front of him, and, he basically looked like a DH. So, there's a couple other, things like that. I mean, Gary Sanchez only recorded 92 hits in the season, 34 of them were homers. Miguel Sano also hit 34 homers, only had 94 hits in the season. So, it's just like, obviously something is going on with the baseball. I'm really surprised we only had 150 homers. We would have more.
Well, you're talking about some of these players could have had an astronomical amount of home runs this year if that thing was prorated, because if you play in 150 games, 140 games, you're going to bat, over 500 times during the course of a season?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and, you do wonder, if Trout would have stayed healthy, if Yelich would have stayed healthy. They only finished 5 and 6 home runs away from 50. They probably would have gotten there. I wouldn't have been surprised at all to see both of them get there. Interesting. Nelson Cruz and George Springer also missed a big chunk, almost 40 games, over 40 games apiece. They finished at 41 at 39. If you give them some more games, they could get there.
Yeah, there did seem to be a lot of injuries this season, and I'm still trying to figure out how that happens, why it seems so prevalent in the modern era of baseball.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, a lot of the older players that you talk to actually attribute it to weightlifting. They believe that the guys are just too muscled up and they're getting injured because of that.
Yeah, wasn't one, was, I was trying to think now, when you mentioned weightlifting, didn't someone's season really come to an end when he injured himself in the weight room? I'm trying to remember who that was.
It was a pitcher. I don't remember his name, but it was a pitcher who got hurt
right,
in the weight
room. That ended, yeah, and that ended the season. That was it.
So
maybe you're right. Maybe that they should cut down on that, but they don't seem to be doing it. Maybe they should take a hard look at the weightlifting and maybe cut back a little bit on it. Maybe that would reduce the amount of injuries.
So, yeah, I wish I remembered his name, but, yeah, I know it was a pitcher who got
hit. That's
a
very interesting theory because years ago when there wasn't as much emphasis placed on weightlifting back in the modern era of baseball, 50s, 60s, 70s, those guys played everybody. If they missed 7 or 8 games, that was a lot during the course of a season. Now look at the difference.
Well, it's a lot like how the basketball discussion is going now. You know, the key phrase in basketball is the term load management, where, you know, guys get days off. You know, like Kawhi Leonard has already had 2 games off, and the Clippers have only played like 8 games. Obviously, the older players have really come out against this, you know, and they don't understand it, you know, why these guys need to be load managed. And, you know, like Michael Jordan's quote was, you know, you're paid to play 82 games, but that's just not how it goes anymore.
No, not even close. It just, when you think about his career, he had 1 year when he missed a lot of games. What is it, first or second year when he broke his leg? But the rest of his career, he was very, very durable player. And I'm sure the conditioning wasn't as strong then, and the weight room and everything else wasn't as impressive technology-wise as they have now, and yet the players missed more games.
Yeah. But now they miss it by choice. So.
Yeah.
I am interested to kind of get your comment here. You know, Friday night, the good old Mickey Mouse Network shows an NBA game. Tonight, their choice was, and I don't get this one at all, the Cleveland Cavaliers at the Washington Wizards is the marquee game tonight. Can you give me a reason to watch this?
I can't think of one valid reason to watch that game. Nor can you, I'm sure.
You know, I mean, besides the fact that I have Bradley Beal in my FanDuel lineup tonight, I don't know why I would tune this in. You know, I mean, let's see. I can tell you where are they? Here you go. The Wizards, both teams are 2-5. So it's a matchup of 2-5 teams.
Well, how far in advance do they schedule these so-called marquee games or prime games?
You know, I'm obviously, you know, they are scheduled ahead, but you can't tell me you were looking at the schedule and thought, oh yeah, the Cavaliers and Wizards are going to be good teams next year. Why didn't they show it? They could have had. Now the game starts at 6:00. The other options would have been Memphis at Orlando. Okay, not a huge draw there, but this other game is Detroit at Indiana. There's a chance that Blake Griffin comes back tonight, so you could have had that working in your favor. And Indiana's a playoff team.
Yeah,
neither Cleveland or Washington is going to make the playoffs.
No. To me, that Detroit-Indiana game sounds a lot more interesting than the choice that ESPN has made.
So, you know, and then if you're up late, the NBA TV game tonight is actually Miami at Los Angeles. It's the Lakers. So, you know, that's a 9:30 start our time. So if you're hanging out late, you can see Jimmy Butler take on LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Well, he's done a good job. Certainly, Butler has really played very well for Miami, who's been kind of a surprise so far this season. So that game should generate a little interest, obviously.
Yeah, he's done a pretty good job. They're six and two out of the gate, while the Lakers won. The Lakers lost their first game, and they've won their next six. So it should be an interesting game.
Yeah, definitely, and you got to say that Miami has improved, and Jimmy Butler has to have a lot to do with it.
I don't know if it's some of his arrogance or his
attempt at being funny when he does these interviews. I'm not quite
sure.
I think
he's trying to be funny, and it just doesn't come off that way. But
no.
I want to get to this before we forget. Before I forget, I got to jump in here, and we got to get your pick. You did go 2-0 last week, so you're kind of back on track. So we got our couple picks today. Of course, we stick with, Northwestern and Illinois. This week, Purdue comes to Northwestern. The Wildcats have been scuffling, but I think Purdue lost last week. You got Northwestern finally picking up a win, or you're going against the Wildcats again?
I'm going to go against the Wildcats again because their offense is just absolutely atrocious.
All right. Now we got the Illini, who are rolling, surprised by how good Illinois is doing. Tough matchup this week, though. They are at Michigan State. You got the Illini getting another big win here. They beat Wisconsin. I think they beat Rutgers last week. You got them taking it to SMU this weekend?
Well, I would love to see an upset there, but I'm going to have to go with Michigan State on this one.
Oh, boo. Boo. Going against both teams. But you are 66-31 doing your picks, so we can't complain too much.
No, my percentage has been fairly good so far.
So yeah, if it keeps going like this, we may have start having you do the betting lines and see if you can pick if they're going to cover or not, because that's always a little tougher.
Yeah, that's much more difficult.
Yeah. I think I told you in an email I would be a terrible gambler because I would have bet the Lakers and given the 7.5 to the Bulls, and the Bulls lost by 6 the other night, so I would have lost all my money.
Yeah, well, you probably figured there was going to be a major upset, and I thought maybe a miracle might happen that game. Until the fourth quarter started and the Lakers went on an 18-0 run, which is an absolute abomination.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that kind of happened. The weird part is, they made that run with LeBron James and Anthony Davis on the bench.
Yeah, that's right. But you got to look on the plus side by saying that both the Blackhawks and the Bulls are on a winning streak right now.
Yeah, look at that. Don't know how long it'll last. I don't know when they play next. It may be over the next game, but at least, they both pulled out victories. Was yesterday?
Well, I think it was the day before for the Bulls when they won wire-to-wire on the road against Atlanta. And, of course, last night the Blackhawks at home beat Vancouver, who, by the way, is a pretty good team. They had a pretty nice record starting out the season, and the Blackhawks dominated them. With probably their most impressive win of the season.
Yeah, the Bulls won, and I completely forgot they were even on. So, that'll teach me.
The Bulls are going to lose. They have a big lead for the entire game, and it's time for Atlanta to make their move in the fourth quarter and pull away and win the game by 4 or 5 points. But for a change, that didn't happen.
Yeah. So, yeah, you do always wonder that, is it here, here they come, where's the run happening? So, but we'll see. At least neither of them are playing tonight, so we know they won't lose tonight, right?
No, they won't. Neither one will lose tonight.
All right. Well, it looks like it's time to start our weekend. Hello, that's the music. Dan will be here on Monday. Dan's job, but it's all on the holidays, so he's going to come down to the podcast. Of course, we'll be at the Sports Temple Facebook page. If you can do that, like while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate it. on the radio. Feel free to look me up on Twitter.